a legally based organization that really inadvertently aligns with the philosophy of animal communication, which at its core is that animals are sentient beings who deserve to have a voice. In today's interview, you're going to hear more about how you can get involved quite easily and also about some of the amazing work this organization is doing. But first, this is the Animal Intuitive Show, where we have weekly episodes about animal communication, natural pet care, and interviews like today's with experts in the fields of animal care and advocacy.
Come on, all you doggies, won't you walk with me? I'm the puppet, 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 puppet dog.
Thank you so much for allowing us this opportunity to talk about our organization and the good work that we do. My role is the Senior Legislative Affairs Program Manager within the organization, and the Animal Legal Defense Fund is 40 years young. We've been around for 40 years, based out of California, and our mission is to protect the lives and advance the interests of animals through the legal system. Most folks may know us for our litigation program. That is certainly how we made our mark. But I'm so excited that the organization has made an investment in the legislative affairs program, and we've expanded to again, expand our reach and work on animal protection legislation. Sure, I would love to give you a broad overview of what's happening across the country. And I think we have to naturally start with a conversation regarding the pandemic and COVID-19 and the impact that that's having not only on the human population, but the animal population as well. A lot of our work has been stalled because state houses across the country closed at the beginning of the second quarter this year. And that's primarily when legislators and legislatures are in session. And so, with those closings, we really didn't have a handle on the pandemic back in March. And so a lot of our work was stalled. Some state houses just closed completely. Their sessions ended for the year completely. But we've been able to pivot as well and continue the conversation with legislators as we work through helping humans, the human population, while still recognizing that animal protection is a serious issue that, unfortunately does coincide with the pandemic. And so, a lot of our work has also been in transitioning, empowering the public, providing webinars, and talking about one in particular issue at the federal level, the Tiger King and the Big Cat Safety Act. And that's something that came out of, tragically, out of this pandemic, recognition on that issue because of the Netflix docuseries. And so our team really was at the forefront in working on a webinar to engage legislators and the public to take action on that and recognize the issue of the animals and not just sensationalize, some of the folks that unfortunately run these facilities. And so there's been great success with that bill. It has actually, I'm gonna look at my cheat sheets as we're talking because there's so many issues we're going to be discussing. There are 250 bipartisan co-sponsors on that bill, and that's pretty extraordinary. Actually, 264, I had an update earlier, and that's out of 435 representatives in the House and 100 in the Senate. This is at the federal level. And when you have that much support for an issue, it's shocking that something doesn't pass. So we're holding out hope that this bill will be able to pass, if not this year, then in the next session. But this really recognition really came about because of the pandemic. And and it's really unfortunate, but we're glad that we were able to capitalize on the opportunity to speak out for the animals.
Yeah, and it seems like the pandemic has brought up a few issues. One of the things we were going to talk about tonight was the prohibiting of persons who had animal cruelty offenses from owning domestic animal companions. You also were going to talk about some issues relating to domestic violence. So I think both of those kind of are relevant with people being at home more, people maybe trying to take in animals more. You could talk about those a little bit too.
Sure. Well, I think to your last point, my goodness, shelters have had extraordinary success with foster and adoption. So if there's a bright light because of all of us staying at home, working from home, this is it, mm-hmm. That people are able to help companion animals. And my goodness, what a great problem to have. And that, again, benefits more of the smaller organizations that perhaps are in greater need, and they can partner with the larger shelters because they now have space. So it's really a win-win for everybody. In terms of the rise and the spike that we've seen in domestic violence, one of our staff members had penned an article relating to the sequestration that, you know, we have the lockdown orders again more towards the beginning of this year, and because of that, those domestic violence cases were up. You know, folks that are in abusive relationships, if they're going to be abusing humans, they're going to be abusing animals, and vice versa. And so that's why we are such staunch supporters of cross-reporting bills. That's one area that we think that we can take a proactive approach towards addressing this issue by having states enact mandatory veterinary reporting as well as interagency reporting. So those would be agencies such as Family and Children's Services, elder agencies, folks with perhaps special needs. And if they have a caseworker going out checking in on people, again, in these vulnerable communities, if they suspect that an animal is being neglected or abused, they would be mandated to report that. And in essence, that is protecting humans, mm-hmm. because, again, of the link that we know between human violence and animal cruelty.
Oh, that's great.
So those two in particular. I know you mentioned about the possession ban, so I'm happy to talk about that as well. Mm-hmm. And we've seen an uptick in this also. There's actually a bill in New Jersey. I hope that we can kind of touch upon certain bills in specific states so that your audience could recognize that it's not just one area of the country that is supporting and moving animal protection legislation, mm-hmm. it's a great swath across the country that we have, opportunity to do this. And so these possession bans, in essence, would prohibit people that have been charged with criminal abuse from owning an animal. Mm-hmm. And, I think a big part of what we do is also recognizing that animal cruelty, animal neglect in particular, oftentimes it's not, it may not be intentional. Mm-hmm. And mental illness is a big part of what happens in hoarding cases in particular. We're not looking to punish people. We want people to get the help that they need, that they require, and that's by professionals. But we also never want to have an animal be put in harm's way. Mm-hmm. And there is a 100% recidivism rate when it comes to hoarding. So just, pulling out those animals, finding them a good home is not the answer. You have to address the root cause, which could be mental illness. So again, I think it's just working hand in hand with other agencies, and recognizing that not all of these issues are criminal mm-hmm. abuses. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a good thing to keep in mind. So as far as, the philosophy of and the sort of the mission of the Animal Legal Defense Fund, what interested me is I've gotten your emails for years, and I click and sign and try to
help with doing that. You know, sometimes you feel like it's not really doing much. So I would get these emails from you all, and I would, you know, click. There were things to try to, you know, get attention from to get legislation going for certain issues. And so that always interested me about you all. But then, you know, I saw some things coming through about having advocates in court, I believe. And, you know, it just seemed like you all really had sort of a bigger picture, a deeper sort of philosophy about animals as sentient beings. You know, so I would love to hear more about, you know, just you are a legal, so you have this legal aspect to your foundation and your the legislation piece. But you also have kind of this, to me, that kind of aligns with the whole idea of animal communication and understanding animals in a deeper level. So maybe I could just let you talk a little bit about that.
Sure. And I'm so grateful. I'm so glad that you brought this up. You know, let's take the legal system out of it. Common sense should prevail in this, in that we know animals are not property. They are not in the sense that we normally think of a car, a TV, you know, any inanimate object. We know, we all know, anyone who has had or experienced an animal in their life knows that they have individual personalities. Every single animal, we're talking wildlife as well as farmed animal and companion animals, and they are living, breathing beings that can experience pain, joy, suffering, fear. And that's what we want to acknowledge and codify. And just in the law, just say that there's a distinction. They don't have to have human rights per se, just a distinction to say that they are not a table, but they're not a human. If that's where the law is comfortable, you know, somewhere in between. And so what we're working on right now, specifically, we're following the lead from Connecticut. And this was called Desmond's Law in Connecticut, which passed. And subsequently in Maine, a bill has also become law to enact a courtroom animal advocate program. We're calling them CAP, or CAPS. For short, CAP bills. And my goodness, actually, I'm going to turn this way because we have California, Florida, Illinois, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, and Texas. We had looked this year to have conversations in those states regarding moving a bill forward. Mm-hmm. And in New Jersey, I think we're, you know, poised to have a hearing on a bill that would allow licensed attorneys within the state and third year supervised law students become an advocate, just like there's a child advocate in the scheme of the law. We were asking, and we are asking, for the same thing for animals, so that there's someone there who could speak to their interest. The prosecutor has their job, the defense attorney has their job. Who is there for the animal? That's what we're looking to do. It's about justice. You know, we just want to make sure that there's justice for the animal. And so what's really exciting about the bill in New Jersey, I don't know if you can tell, I don't reside in California. I'm in New Jersey, so I have at the top of my head that the knowledge base is New Jersey. And really grateful and really excited that we have such wonderful legislators in our state, again, bipartisan on both sides, historically have been supportive of animal protection bills. The courtroom animal advocate program bills have both been introduced by the judiciary chairs in the respective house. We're bicameral, so we have a Senate, an upper chamber, and a lower, the Assembly. And both the Assembly and Senate chairs for judiciary are the bill sponsors. So we're really excited. It passed through the full Senate last year, overwhelming bipartisan support. We're hoping we're gonna have the same you know, actions this year. And we know that this is something that is needed, and our organization is committed to pursuing bills such as this.
Yeah, that's terrific. That's wonderful. You know, it kind of, going back so many years, I used to work in the New York City foster care system as a social worker and would go to court and work with the attorneys for representing the kids. But I would be in the homes and I would sometimes see that animals maybe weren't being treated as well. And there really wasn't, you know, maybe it wasn't like an overt case of abuse, but they just didn't have anyone to speak up for them and for their well-being. So, you know, it's really wonderful to hear that this is actually, you know, something like that is going into, hopefully going to be, it would be wonderful if it became across the country, but it's wonderful to see that it's really starting to pick up and get some attention. And you mentioned, and I'm kind of, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but I was wondering, you know, are you seeing anything where there's anything that's been held back that maybe perhaps with a new, we're kind of in a weird place right now in November 2020, but with a new president coming in, or, you know, change, a lot of change going on, actually. What do you, mm-hmm. do you see anything that maybe has not been able to go forward, or there's been concern in the world of animal welfare that maybe there's a hope now? And don't worry if, you know, this wasn't something we necessarily prepared for, but it just came up as a question to me, yeah. if anything.
Yeah. No, and I think it's a valid question because of where we are right now. And that's kind of, you know, we have results. We're in a holding pattern. When the new transition happens in January, you know, what are the results going to be then? And I think that's really going to determine the answer to your question. I don't know that I can give a concrete answer right now because there are so many variables still at play.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important for everybody to know that no matter what, like for just to, I'll specifically answer your question first and then kind of go on a bit of a tangent after. But there are certain bills that relate to farmed animal protection that I think will have a better chance because of the connection with climate change and sustainability and environmental degradation and the intersection of whether it's communities of a lesser socioeconomic means that live near these concentrated feeding lots, and there's, you know, just immense lagoons that are polluting the waterways, and whether it's mega dairies with methane into the air. I think that we haven't had the opportunity to meaningfully address the industry. And I'm hoping that because of where we are right now, with recognition of our time, really kind of the clock is ticking on climate change. And if we don't look at some of the major impactors, then we're just, you know, dooming ourselves. And so there is the Farm System Reform Act, mm-hmm. and that's something that I you know, I'm not sure if there's going to be complete traction on or not, but it would immediately prohibit the creation or expansion of factory farms, and it would require, or during the pandemic, and it would require them to cease operation by 2040. And that would be significant because these large factory farms really do contribute, again, so much in terms of environmental degradation. And, you know, we have to just really be careful, too, when we're looking at how to mitigate carbon, because there's a lot of talk about biogas right now. And I know it seems like we're kind of off the topic, but we're not. Everything is truly connected. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to biogas and, you know, dirty, you know, industry, energy industries are looking to pump that, you know, methane from cows back into the soil and then pull it back out for oil or gas. But then you're just bolstering this dirty industry and you're not actually affecting climate change. So, you know, the answer is not to continue with farming as we currently know it, but we have an opportunity to change the system for our own health as well as the earth. And so, you know, when we talk about what could be different when it comes to companion animals and other issues, federal lands, hunting, restoring the balance of nature, not allowing egregious practices such as baiting and the killing of wildlife, bears in particular, while they're hibernating. Like, these are just atrocious and really egregious practices that I think the vast majority of us don't approve of. If you know, we don't judge what you're eating or if you are hunting, but these like hyper cruel methods are really what's so concerning, because there's a detachment from animals, and I don't think that's good for any of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, I mean, that speaks so much to just the whole philosophy of animal communication, that animals do have thoughts, they have feelings, and I think what you're saying is so important. The more that we disrespect that and disconnect from that, it just seems to have some kind of an impact on who we are as people, even as we relate to each other. And it's hard to even put your finger on that, why exactly that is, but it's probably a big, long other discussion for another show. But it does seem so important just to human beings in general, and how we relate to each other. So the work that you all are doing is really, it's so broad. You're covering so many different avenues, and I'm wondering, can you talk more about who does all this work? Who I know you have some volunteers, and we're going to talk more about that too, but tell us about that. How do you structure all this?
Sure. Well, again, the organization, primarily known for our litigation program, but we have a very robust criminal justice program as well. And those are the folks that will help legislators, prosecutors, perhaps even speak with judges and other organizations, offering support, model language, etc. And then you have our legislative affairs program, and there are four of us that are covering the country. I wish it was a nice, neat split into quadrants, quarters, but it's not. We're kind of part and parcel across the country. So we have folks that could speak to your audience in any state. And I think that's important. You referenced that earlier. And then, of course, we have a designated team member who covers federal affairs. But I also want to note that it's not just state and federal. It's also at the local level, and that could nicely segue into kind of grassroots or citizen lobbying. And I want people to know that, just as you mentioned before with signing action alerts and emails, and it's all important, and it all makes a difference. And that's what we need more of for any constituent. And we hope you're a voting constituent. We hope you're registered to vote, because legislators will note that they should be speaking to any constituent. But here's hoping that you're all registered to vote. And that then your voice becomes even more impactful. And you arguably have the most sway with your legislator, again, as a constituent. And but that's also at the local level. So your town, your village, your city, I mean, your local council or mayor and council, if you can reach out to them, any one of our bills basically have an identical ordinance. And so if you wanted to support a ban on puppy mills, or enact a ban on puppy mills at the local level, to say, hey, my town, we don't want to have any stores, any new stores built that will prop up the puppy mill industry. Mm-hmm. Reach out to us. We'll, generate some model language for you and walk you through it. So again, at the local level, it's way easier and it takes less time to pass a resolution or an ordinance. At the state level, it could take a little bit longer. Don't be discouraged if it's a year or two or four or six. It could take that long, depending on your legislature, your representatives, and your sessions. And then at the federal level, that is the hardest because it's like moving a mountain. But we, again, are grateful that we've seen some movement on issues, regardless of the administration. But certainly, you know, this, we would like everybody to be active at every level. And we have, if you're a beginner, I had just done in May a Lobby 101, which I'm happy to provide the link for that, as well as like a 2.0, which is how to advocate for animals with or without a law degree. And it just walks you through the basics. You would be surprised how easy it is and how quickly you could have your legislator initiate a dialogue with your legislator and or their staff and move on issues, you know. So oftentimes it only takes a handful of residents to become vocal, and your legislator may support an issue.
That's great. It's wonderful that you have these resources. And as I mentioned before, we'll have some of these links down below that we've talked about, some things here that would help people to have a direct link to your website and just more information. Is there anything that we have not talked about that would be important to touch on?
Yeah, actually, I hope you don't mind if I actually go through the list of bills. I don't know the demographic of the folks that are on the call right now, but I do want to kind of rattle them off again, just to show that this is not an East Coast, West Coast thing. You know, we've got so many great legislators across the country, and bills that are moving. Or again, I should rephrase that, because many legislatures are done for the year, but I do want to at least provide an overview of what we have worked on. And I think there's about six states that are either in special session right now or still in their normal session. But animals used in research, whether it's animal testing bans, cosmetic sales bans, we're working on that in Massachusetts, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and Vermont. Captive animals, this would be circus bans in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New York. Companion animal issues, such as those puppy mill bans, California, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New York. And New York, the New York bill passed halfway this year through the full Senate. So we're really looking forward to the next session, which starts in January, to move it over the finish line. The bill has to be reintroduced. But since it already passed through the full Senate this session, we only have halfway to go. So we're excited about New York for next year. The Courtroom Animal Advocate Program, I had mentioned all of the states before. Cross-reporting in Florida, New Jersey, and New York. Possession bans, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Jersey. And farmed animals, we're part of a vast and robust coalition on hen welfare, and we've provided various levels of support in Massachusetts, Maine, and Hawaii, and we have had discussions to revive a New Jersey pig gestation crate ban, which we're hoping will pass this year. And wildlife killing contests in Colorado, New Jersey, New York, and Ohio, we're looking to move those, as well as oppose black bear hunts in New Jersey and Missouri. So that's the overview of some of our issues, but I'd be more than happy to answer any questions, any additional questions that you may have.
Okay. Yeah, I know the bear issue in New Jersey is big. If you're not from New Jersey, you don't realize.
Yeah.
We have a lot of bear debates.
Yeah, can I put a plug in for that, if I may? Because we're so grateful to Governor Murphy for publicly announcing that he will not approve a new black bear management plan in 2021 if it includes lethal methods. However, the black bear hunt was expanded from what was a one-week hunt. It's now twice a year. And we've already had our October hunt. Okay. A new hunt, another hunt is coming up December 7th. Okay. And with the spike in COVID, the second wave happening across the country, really, but New Jersey specific, we're looking at inviting 600 hunters into the state. And I think that's incredibly troublesome during this time. And the governor has the option to issue an executive order to suspend the hunt. We would encourage everybody to reach out to the governor's office. We actually have an action alert up on our website. Please take action on that. Whether you're from New Jersey or not, this could impact you as well. If, you know, some of the hunters come in and they inadvertently, you know, or with someone that has COVID, they could bring it back to your state. So again, I just wanted to make mention of that because it's not a done deal, and we still have a hunt coming up. Yeah.
So if you are not from New Jersey, you can still reach, you can still advocate, you can still use the, fill out the form online and.
Correct.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's good to know. Okay. And you mentioned before, I'm kind of swinging back to something you said, that when you fill out those online forms where they say, you know, I am concerned about X, Y, and Z, you know, please support this or that, you said that they actually know if you are a registered voter?
No, well, no. Not when you send that, but oftentimes they may look up whether or not you're a registered voter and who you are. They'll oftentimes check to make sure that you're a constituent. So the staff members may ask for your address. And if you supply that, you know, then they can, I mean, it's the time of very little privacy. So everything is easily traceable. But but I really do want to emphasize the point that your voice is heard. And I truly hope that people will take action. We cannot do this alone. We rely on constituents, on people that are on the ground in the state that are voicing their concerns. And so it would be awesome if anybody has interest in any of the issues that we talked about to reach out to us, and we can walk you through the steps on how to engage your legislator and get active on any of these issues. I'm the eternal optimist, and I feel like you never know. You just never know if that one phone call is going to make the difference.
Yeah, I agree. Wonderful. And another way you can, you know, help out here is to share this, let other people know about this interview, you know, put this out here in, you know, share it to different mediums, you know, share it to different social media outlets, email, you know, there's different ways to get people to watch. And, you know, you can play a role just in simply doing that. So, you know, is there anything else that we have not touched upon that I have missed?
Well, I'm not sure if everybody knows who we are, so please go to our website. It's aldf.org, O-R-G. And I'm just going to, I'm going to turn this way. As you can see, all of our clients are innocent. And I just wanted to emphasize that point because animals truly are the innocent ones. And we need to be their voice since they cannot speak out for themselves. So I thank you so much for this opportunity. And platform to talk about the good work that we do, and welcome working with everyone else who shares this interest.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here. And, you know, as usual, you can always reach me. My website is intuitivetouchanimalcare.com or directly at Ann with an E at intuitivetouchanimalcare.com.
Rub my belly. Rub my belly. Rub my belly.